Me and my boy chillin' on the max in the bus. Looking both ways before stepping dog, that is a must. Dynamics from PO, we on that safety tip, so we safely get to hot spots in every place we hit.
My hello and welcome to the August edition of the Portland Afoot podcast. This is our second podcast. I'm Lillian Kerbig.
And I'm Michael Anderson.
We're going to talk today about Lyft fares. Portland Disability Advocates has been having a lot of success inspiring people to come out and testify at TriMet board hearings, particularly over the recent proposed fare increase for Lyft fare.
We're also going to talk about Southwest Ankeny, the car-free plaza in the middle of downtown Portland, and whether it's working or not. And we're going to give you our new feature, a low-car travel tip of the month.
And of course, as always, our TriMet tweets and a reading of the Only on the Bus from this issue of Portland Afoot.
We hope you enjoy it. Here we go. Just try it. Ride safely in the way you want to be. DX is in the building with a whole new plan. Hip-hop moguls now, I'm a whole new man. TriMet dealing with more green and produce stands. If you were young and by the max, you better hold a hand. Because the train is silent. Better change your knowledge if you don't want to... So Lyft fares. You want to give us a little background, Michael? Yeah. Folks who have serious mobility issues qualify for a special van service. It's actually mandated by the Americans with Disabilities Act that provides point-to-point, sort of like a taxi. It's basically a TriMet-operated taxi that takes you from any point to another within the TriMet service district. And you can do this for, right now, $1.85. It's slightly more than a honored citizen pass you'd be using if you were a person with a disability on a bus, but very cheap compared to the $29 it costs on average per trip for TriMet.
So two terms that are kind of important to understand this are the Lyft service, which is the service we're talking about.
The taxis.
And then kind of the alternate, which is just the regular bus system, which is called the fixed route system. The reason this is kind of a difference is because Lyft will take you exactly where you need to go. It's door-to-door service. You actually get escorted if you need to be escorted. Whereas the fixed route service is the bus service that you're used to, which is clearly stuck on a route and you can't ask it to take you directly to your location.
Well, TriMet staff has been saying that this service is unsustainable and 99% of riders don't use it, but it's using 11% of the agency's entire operating budget. The staff says they need to recover more of that $29 cost for the taxi service. They want to raise that by 15% on average for each of the next 4 years, which is a pretty steep increase, especially considering Social Security payments have been frozen for 3 years and are likely to continue to be that way with the economy we've got. What do you see as the ups and downs of doing this?
Well, so the proposed fare increase, you know, one of the arguments for it is the commuter rail is right, proportionally higher. But whereas Lyft is serving low-income residents, most people that are using Lyft fares are relying on Social Security or other forms of fixed income.
TriMet actually has an obstacle course, so you can no longer sign up for Lyft service unless you've proven that you can't traverse this obstacle course downtown. There may be some exceptions to that, but that's the general rule. So TriMet has been working hard to make sure that people do not use Lyft service if they don't need it. Still, they feel like people are using it more than they need to.
Right. And they want to figure out a way to kind of force these people onto the fixed route system.
So they're raising the price.
But the main argument against this is the fact that the fixed route service is just not ready to handle the capacity that it would have to take if people stopped using Lyft fare, because the fleet is not prepared for it. 40% of the bus system currently is high floor, which means that you have to use the chairlift if you're using a wheelchair to get around. Every time a person gets on using wheelchair on those chairlifts, it adds like 4 minutes
or
so.
4 to 6 minutes.
4 to 6 minutes, because the driver has to get out and assist them and use the chairlift, and those are very slow.
That actually counts getting on and then getting off again.
So it's a significant increase, and that means that everyone's bus is later. So it affects everyone's use of the system.
Have you seen the Lyft vans driving around?
Mm-hmm.
You know what they look like?
Yeah.
So I was keeping my eyes open for them in the last few months, and I'm trying to notice when I saw them. And I saw a lot of them, actually, when I was over in the West Side suburbs a few weeks ago. I saw three of them drive past. And I think that makes sense, because the bus service is so much worse in the suburbs. If you can call a taxi, basically, for $1.85 and take you anywhere, you're going to do it.
And so it's going to have the biggest impact in these suburbs where the high floor buses are running because there's so low ridership. There's a strong, I mean, a lot of people are going to be moving onto these buses, and those that suburban bus service is going to be hurt even more. On the other hand, I would say I'm willing to make the case that it's good for riders in general to have good service, and the system is being sucked dry of money. 50% of all the new revenue that's come into TriMet in the last 5 years has gone to Lyft service. And bus service, meanwhile, and it's increased by 37%. Bus service has been cut back by 13%. It seems to me that there are many people who have important reasons to ride TriMet who are disadvantaged in many different ways. If they don't happen to have a mobility problem, there's a strong argument that that shouldn't be the only criteria for whether somebody deserves excellent transit service.
Which is quite a fair argument. But I think you're putting the burden on people that already have mobility issues, which probably are affected by a lot of the other same hardships that other transit users have too. So it's kind of this double whammy, if you will. Like, they have limited mobility in addition to limited income and unemployment or whatever sort of hardships folks have. So it's the idea that we're raising fares on the people that are the most reliant on transit is really the tough thing here. And, you know, in this time, we're going to have to make hard choices. The kind of the main thing with this Lyft fare increase is initially that we're proposing taking away the all-you-can-eat pass, the unlimited monthly pass that they had. And in response, they decided they were going to try to raise the Lyft fare 15% each year. The main argument here is not that that people with disabilities aren't accepting of the fare having to be raised slightly. It's that the fare is being raised unfair in proportion to the rest of the system. So the proposed fare increase was a 20%, which was four times the fare increase.
Well, when you're trying to discourage somebody from using a product, you raise its price. Right. And that's what TriMet is doing. I've got one last thing I wanted to make. I want to say about this. I'm jealous of disability advocates' ability to, as somebody who doesn't happen to be disabled, and I'm jealous of this group's ability to get what they want from the transit system and walk into a meeting and have people do that. So you talked to Levine. What do you attribute his success, his group's success to? They've been able to mobilize. Throw back the board on all this stuff.
Yeah, right. And well, I think the thing is that they were able to mobilize a group of people that, you know, no pun intended, have mobility issues. And the fact that they got 35 people to show up to the board meeting this month.
That's a lot of people.
And it's 35 people with disabilities that showed up to the board meeting.
Right.
So these are people that typically are often just challenged in getting to these meetings because
But they also may not have jobs during the day to go to.
Right.
I don't know what the specific situation is, but I think that's it. These are people who are able to attend the meetings because, in part, I think you're more likely to be able to attend a meeting.
But we haven't seen this in the past. I mean, here's the thing, is that I think the fact is that this time, this was seen as such a big issue in the community that the disabled community actually did come out for this.
That's
because
true.
You don't normally see people with disabilities showing up to these type of meetings, especially in this large of numbers.
I don't know.
I've, in my experience in community organizing, I've never seen this kind of turnout before. And I think I think Michael Levine really hit on it. You know, I asked him, like, why do you think that this campaign against what they call the unfair fare increase has been so successful? And he said, when TriMet comes up with a proposal that's going to harm so many people, you get a half dozen leaders from the community, and that really motivates people. And he said that the biggest victory that's come out of this is that the disabled community is more united than he's ever seen in the 12 years that he's been working on advocacy. And he's been doing this work for a very long time, but people really came out this time.
Yeah.
And we really saw people with disabilities step up to the plate to kind of get what they wanted out of the TriMet board.
And this new group is focusing just on transit issues for now, is that right?
Right. No. So what, I guess when the Portland Disability Advocates, when they were originally formed, they were going to work on housing and transit and other things related to people with disabilities. But now Michael announced earlier this week that they were only going to focus on transit and TriMet. And he just says that they want to establish a TriMet that it really is for all people and has equal service for all people.
So we'll be hearing more from this no prisoners group of advocates in the future.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to see and hopefully learn for other disenfranchised groups.
So Ankeny?
Yeah, let's talk about Ankeny. So Southwest Ankeny, between 2nd and 3rd, starting July 20th, was roped off and is now a car-free street. And this passed as an emergency measure by City Council, which emergency simply means that it went into effect immediately. And it's kind of this first gasp at kind of seeing if we can have a plaza for pedestrians. And it was a pretty easy thing to decide to close off the street in terms of traffic, because there really was no motor vehicle traffic flow on the street. It's a one block, you know, angular street that goes between a one way and another one way, which go opposite ways. So it really was not a highly. What's happened now is they now have this street roped off, and they put bike parking in at one end.
They're blocking the former car entry with a bike corral, so you can't mistake it as being no drive down the street.
Yeah. And then they just have rows upon rows upon rows of wooden picnic tables, all surrounded by twine held up by big metal
kind of
stands.
Can you hear the scorn in Lily's voice?
It's really ugly.
It's sort of the Walmart of pedestrian plazas, but
it's a good way to describe it.
I think we actually had a drink there a few weeks ago and had a great time. And they've got the Christmas lights strung over the place. And I walk through there all the time. I've got a part-time job nearby. There are always people enjoying themselves at the tables. Voodoo Donuts has their new location. All the tourists are piling out the door and have nowhere to sit when they're done. So they all sit at these tables. It creates this great little space that people can go to and sort of talk about and say, let's sit over there, you know, in the middle of downtown. Following this tradition that's been very successful in other cities of blocking off parts of the city for unconcerned pedestrians to do their thing. I think that's a cool idea.
I'm really glad that they kind of went out on this limb and did this, because I think it's really exciting. And I hope that it sets a precedent, but I also hope that it sets a model of what not to do to create a welcoming space. They strung like twinkle lights that come on when it's dark above the space, and that is beautiful. And pretty much nothing else about the space is beautiful. Right. I mean, it's this, like, it was this dingy little street before, and now it's this dingy little street filled with difficult to navigate picnic tables. And what's more is, before, because there was such low motor vehicle traffic on the street, people would walk up and down the street portion very commonly, especially like during Saturday Market when there's a lot of pedestrian traffic. And now, because it's roped off, because these businesses have liquor licenses for tables, you're forced, if you're not patronizing one of the businesses, you're forced onto the sidewalk along these. And these are not wide sidewalks. These are like little, narrow, kind of dingy sidewalks. And more, so they're restricting pedestrian flow, I think, kind of from what it was before. And now it's actually excluding minors from the area. So they're taking a public street, which previously you could be any age, and use this. Now, if you're under 21, you can't use the space at all whatsoever. Yeah, so actually, at the Portland Afoot anniversary,
guest speaker was a minor, and I hadn't put it together that he wasn't going to be able to walk inside the rope. So he ended up delivering his entire speech, and we all did, from the sidewalk, sort of shouting across the street. It wasn't a comfortable situation. So, like, the city handed over this public space, not to privately owned automobiles for once, but instead to private businesses. And it seems like I'd rather have a human being sitting there than a machine sitting there. But it might be something we should be changing in the future.
I would actually be interested in seeing, if we do approve more of these, if we mandate that there has to be free pedestrian access through the space, which was what I imagined when I heard this first, and is not what the result was. And I would like to see City Council be like, okay, rule number zero is, if you come to us wanting one of these, you have to have free pedestrian access through the space. But I firmly believe I love giving space away to people enjoying themselves, not inside cars. So I'm still very happy that they did this. And so it closes October 21st. So if you want to go get a drink on a former street, you should, you know, go down there before October 21st.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yes.
We want to talk about streetcar fares. I have been
Lily
has been trying to prevent you guys from learning about the important fact that the free rail zone might be taken away with regard to streetcar. And I have been fighting the producer of this podcast to get this on the air. So that's the fact you need to know. The free rail zone, in the next few weeks, you're going to hear an announcement from the city or streetcar or something of them saying, hey, maybe we're going to take the free rail zone away from the streetcar, and you'll have to pay $1, perhaps $2.10 to ride the streetcar in different portions of it, and people are going to flip out, and it's going to be important. So we wanted you to say you heard it here first on the Portland Foot Podcast that this is about to come up, and it's going to be, a fairly big deal. All right. That was painless, wasn't it?
Maybe.
All right.
Next, we're going to do a low-car travel tip of the month, which Michael just took a trip last week, so...
I was on the Amtrak Cascades, which I love, as listeners of our first episode will remember, up to Seattle to see my sister, and on the way home, I was able to geek out with the conductors and figure out the optimum seating spaces for all sorts of tasks. We've got a new wiki page for that. We'll try to link to that from the description, but... I wanted to just say specifically, if you want to always guarantee that you have an electrical outlet to plug your computer or phone or other device into while you're sitting on the Amtrak Cascades on your delightful ride from a large city in the Pacific Northwest, if it's going northbound, get in seats 25 through 29 of cars 5 through 9. If it's going southbound, get in seats 1 through 4 of cars 5 through 9. It's different in each direction because of the seats being rotated in each direction. The rule of thumb is if it's going south, you want a low seat number. If it's going north, you want a high seat number.
That's actually really great to know if you're looking for the electrical outlets.
Yes. And so the way to do that is to show up early for your reservation, get in the front of the line for the seat reservation, and ask them for these numbers.
Now you know.
Now you know. TriMet tweets. Lily is going to run through her favorite tweets about our favorite transit system.
Many of these came to me by way of TriMet Diaries on Twitter, which I highly recommend following if you would like funny TriMet-related things. From khabit108, drunk passenger yelled 5 times that he had a PhD from Berkeley, quizzed us on math, and demanded a lighter from everyone. Dr. Jeff got on the max and sat down next to a guy wearing allergic to stupidity t-shirt. Immediately switched seats. Burn. TriMet. Jojo what? Said, 1 cell phone talker on max, an annoyance. 2, cancel each other out. The West Side Tunnel, best of all. Mary Sue Tweedeth says, trying to keep a positive attitude, but I have to ride the giant dangly terrormobile in a few hours, and it's distracting. What I like about this is that TriMet actually retweeted this. Winwards Clyde says, I like to believe that having tattoos equates to having lots of disposable income, and today I rode TriMet with a bunch of millionaires. Kind of a sweet one to end it off. Urban Vole says, Portland first. My bus driver missed a passenger, so he circled the block to go back and pick her up. Hashtag TriMet.
That is amazing.
I know, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's been happening frequently.
That's what we hear.
According to the Twitter nets.
Yeah, so Joe Rose.
Actually, to swing that around, I will go with the very last one. Die.com tweets, this is a red line train to hell.
As all red line trains are, either hell or the airport. Or Beaverton. All right, I'm going to go through the last part of the podcast, and that is to read the only on the bus page from the print edition of Portland Afoot for August related story. This is by Daniel. It's actually a Max story, so it happens on the TriMet Blue Line. I'd venture to guess that he was in his 40s or 50s. He was an older man. This was 15 years ago. I was 12. We were actually headed into Gresham to catch a movie at the old Gresham Center, Ruby Junction, eastbound to Gresham, me, my younger brother, and a friend, Jerry. I remember going on the train and seeing him sitting there wearing a raincoat, and I was like, this guy can't be up to anything good. Nope. It was one of those old cars with the sideways seating, and he was sitting across the aisle and behind us. We were sitting there for a while, and he said, look at this. And then he flashed us. Just opened it up. I tell you, you see it all. Me and my brother look away. Jerry, my friend, looks straight at him. Psychological tidbit, if people think they themselves are in danger, they will respond faster to a dangerous situation. So Jerry immediately yells, fire! They were doing a lot of training in school at the time. I was at that age. Jerry was a bigger guy, between 100 and 150 pounds, and he stands up, he walks over to the flasher and punches him in the face. He wasn't an expert or anything, just normal karate classes. But the flasher guy is pretty hurt, so he calls the police. Meanwhile, we went right back to my house and told my family what happened, and when the police look into it, it turns out that the flasher guy was already wanted for two similar incidents, so they send him to jail. They dropped the assault charge. Jerry ended up being a Marine. He was military police at Guantanamo Bay.
Okay, well, you've been listening to the August edition of the Portland Afoot podcast. We always want to hear from you and hear what you think of the podcast. And hear your awesome bus stories for the Only on Foot. You might be of Portland Afoot newsletter fame if you have a good one. You can find Portland Afoot on Twitter at Portland Afoot.
On Facebook at /Portland Afoot.
And online at portlandafoot.org.
And right here.
And on the podcast, which is available on iTunes and on an RSS feed. Just Google us. You should be able to find us.
Or you can go to pdx.be/podcast.
I'm Lillian Kerbig.
Our producer. I'm Michael Anderson, the Portland Afoot editor.
And this has been a production of Portland in the Round. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Transit to get you around town. Try that, just try it. Remember safety when you're riding around. Try it with TriMet. To get you any place that you might want to see. TriMet, just try it. Ride safely in the way you want to be.